Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us, Hawaii Talks on The Conversation. It is Monday, January 13th. State lawmakers officially head back to begin a new legislative session on Wednesday. In advance of opening day, we take a look at some of the issues that are expected to spark much debate. We hear from the Office of Hawaiian Affairs about its renewed effort to build high-rise towers, Makai of Ala Moana Boulevard. We also look at lower education. What are some controversial issues that affect our public schools? And 2025 is officially the year of our community forests. We spotlight a program called Grow Aloha that pairs native plants with their forever homes. And we look to the skies, naming space rocks and other celestial bodies, how Hawaii is taking part in an international competition. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Current law bans residential housing on the ocean side of Ala Moana Boulevard. It's land the state transferred to the Office of Hawaiian Affairs years ago as a land base. And for the past several years, OHA has tried unsuccessfully to get the zoning changed to allow it to build high-rise towers as part of a development they called Hakuone. Last year, the state budgeted money for repairs to the aging Kewala Harbor, but lawmakers wouldn't budge on lifting the ban on residential development. This morning, OHA's board chair, Kaika Hele, joined us in studio. The former congressman was recently elected as a trustee. He last joined us here, the conversation, when he was running for governor in 2022. Kaheli outlined OHA's top priority, getting the green light to develop its lands on the Makai side of Ala Moana.
I think we have a different vision and a different plan that seems to have, up until this point, been pretty well received from different legislators and people we've spoken to. We had a great community meeting at Kupu last week. About over 200 people attended, and it was something that people framed as unprecedented, that OHA had never done that in the past. Come to the community before the start of the legislative session, provided the bill, provided their vision, specific details, all centered around OHA's desire to be part of a whole-of-government approach to address the state's most pressing need, which is housing, specifically affordable workplace housing. So that is what our bill does. And it does a couple really important things. It will ask the legislature to repeal the 2006 residential prohibition that was put in place by the legislature almost 20 years ago. And it will then ask to raise the height limit along Ala Moana Boulevard for OHA's parcels that it would like to develop workforce housing. It does something really unique that I don't think has been done before. It statutorily requires all residential housing built along the Ala Moana Boulevard corridor to be dedicated to affordable housing. So it mandates 50% plus one unit be dedicated to affordable. Affordable meaning 140% of the area median income as set by the Housing and Urban Development and HHFDC for the island of Oahu, 140% AMI or below. It also statutorily requires that all residential housing in Kakaako Makai will be dedicated to owner occupants. That's never been done before. It's clearly not being done across the street. So the message OHA wants to, for people to remember is and understand is that we want to build affordable housing and workforce housing for local families, local individuals, local families, not out-of-state investors, not second-time home buyers. These are for people that desperately need housing, and that's the nexus of our plan. And I'll give you one more piece that it does, because I'm sure you have a question.
Yes. Well, you've got a different strategy. A little bird tells me that you are not calling it Hakuone anymore, or you're going to rebrand it?
We're not. Yeah, we're not even rebranding it. You know, I wasn't part of OHA when the Hakuone name was developed, but, you know, from a Hawaiian perspective, place names are really, really important. And, you know, I would prefer the traditional names for that area that are well documented and are more suited, in my belief, for the kupuna and those that came before us that lived in that area. And so, you know, we are, for now, even Kaka'ako Makai is a made-up name. That's not the traditional name for that area. So we will go back to eventually what was the traditional place name for that area. But for now, because it is conveniently known as Kaka'ako Makai, we're using that for this piece of legislation.
Well, how do you get past the notion that, you know, when they said no residential on the Makai side of Ala Moana, that it was really to protect that open space? And, you know, initially it was private developers that were going to come in.
Sure.
And so there was a real pushback, like that just did not sit right with the community. And so thus the ban. And so it's not, we hear it, it's not that we're against Hawaiians, it's just we want to keep that open space.
So the HCDA, which governs the Kaka'ako larger area, was created in 1976, and Kaka'ako was designated its first urban development area. Kaka'ako Makai was added in 1982, and over the course of the next 20 or 30 years, residential versus not having residential has shifted at different times. In 2006, as you mentioned, the HCDA had approved a plan by Alexander and Baldwin to develop and sell the properties in Kaka'ako Makai and develop three very large story towers to develop residential housing. And that wasn't palatable for the community, and it wasn't palatable for the legislature. And so they put in a residential prohibition then. We are not Alexander and Baldwin. We are the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. We want to develop this area for workforce housing. We need to impact this area with people so that the commercial, the mixed use, the open promenade, all of those things come to life. You need people for it, an area to come to life. And that's what we want to do. And OHA will provide housing for Native Hawaiians and non-Native Hawaiians. And so I think it's a win-win for all of us. And something that the bill also does, which is really unique, is it statutorily expands and defines what the state's essential workforce is. These are the critical jobs that our local families and local individuals are employed by that really we need to make this state run. Law enforcement, teachers, healthcare professionals, healthcare workers, the hospitality industry, our civil service, our construction industry. And so if you work in a 5-mile nautical radius of Kaka'ako Makai and you fall into one of those six essential workforce categories, you will have a preference to get a workforce housing unit, which will be a 1, 2, or 3-bedroom condo type unit. Meaning when it's time to bid and do a lottery on the building, one of those six essential preferences will have more tickets at the lottery, and so you have a higher probability of actually getting a unit. And then if you happen to be a Native Hawaiian that qualifies and gets a unit, that's when OHA can come in, provide you financial literacy assistance, down payment assistance. We own the land, so we can potentially monetize the land to guarantee that loan for a qualified applicant. There's a lot of ways that we can help our Native Hawaiian beneficiaries to qualify for one of these 1, 2, or 3-bedroom workforce affordable housing condos.
And the, you know, the devil's in the details, but this residential restriction, so how far out does that go? If I sell it or if I get another job, you know,
that's a great,
Kauai,
that's a great
then
point.
What?
So like I said, 50% plus one unit is dedicated to workforce. So the other 49% will be sold at market rate. If you qualify for a workforce affordable unit, which is 140% AMI or below, you can sell that property, you know, if you eventually decide to move from your 1-bedroom to a 2-bedroom or you decide to move into a single family home, but you need to sell that at the 140% or below AMI 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So your deed will be restricted. So you're essentially passing on the same opportunity that you had to move it. Let's say you're currently renting a 1-bedroom apartment right now and you want to own a 1-bedroom condo in Kaka'ako Makai. You can't do that. And eventually you want to move to a home single-family home, you know, in Makiki. Well, you can sell your unit, but it's deed-restricted. You will have to sell it to someone else like yourself was a few years ago.
And then you obviously, with a different strategy, are looking at a different crop of lawmakers. You know, we've had some new cards in the mix.
We do. We've got some great new elected leaders at the legislature. We're looking forward to meeting with them and educating them on our Office of Hawaiian Affairs, what our mission is, why we exist, how we can help support their goals. There's also a lot of familiar faces there as well. But there definitely has been some leadership changes, obviously in the House of Representatives with the loss of former Speaker Scott Saiki. We now have a new Speaker of the House, Nadine Nakamura. And so historically in the past, Speaker Saiki has not been supportive of residential development in Kaka'ako Makai. And OHA feels we have a chance this legislative session since we have a new cadre of leaders in the House and we have new faces in the House. And so it's up to OHA to not just earn the trust of legislators, but we also need to earn the trust of the community. And we've been working very, very hard to do that. What we're asking the community is to, you know, trust the Office of Hawaiian Affairs that what we want to do is genuine, it's authentic. We want to build local housing for local families, and we want to make Kaka'ako Makai a beautiful place that all of Hawaii can enjoy. If you go down to Kaka'ako Makai today, it doesn't look much different than it did in 2006. The Children's Museum is there. That was built in 1998. You have JABSUM and the Cancer Center there. That was built in 2005. Not much has been done since. Fisherman's Wharf is gone. It's fallen into the ocean. It needs major repairs. And it's not a safe place to go at night. If you were to walk around Kaka'ako Makai at night, it's not going to feel like a safe place. We want to change that. And I think OHA has a good plan to do that.
That was OHA Chair Kai Kahele, who joined us in studio earlier this morning. We will have more on OHA's priorities this legislative session after a short break. Stay with us. The Office of Hawaiian Affairs just swore in its Board of Trustees last week, Thursday, and one of its first actions following the investiture was to vote to send its proposed package of bills to state lawmakers. We talked to OHA Chair Kai Kahele this morning about what else is on tap.
We have our budget bill, and so that's typically we ask about $3 million from the state legislature, and we match those funds as well. We're the only state agency that asks for money and matches it one for one with whatever the state legislature gives us. So that's one. Another bill that's really important for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is our public land trust bill. You know, the PLT and the amount that state agencies that lease public trust lands that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs by the Hawaii State Constitution is entitled to a pro rata share of it. Legislature set 20% is the pro rata share in 1981. It's been a fight ever since OHA was created to fight for what OHA was entitled to. And those revenues that we derive from public trust lands, we use for beneficiaries. We use for community grants. We use it for sponsorships. We use it to help pay for Punanaleo kids to go to school, pay for kids to go to college.
And we're talking lands like at the airport.
Not the airport lands.
Oh,
so unfortunately, the airport lands, they were originally part of it, but they were taken out in the subsequent lawsuits took out the airport lands because the airport receives federal dollars and it's against federal law. That was a ruling by the United States Supreme Court that rendered a ruling. And so we do not get revenues from the airport land. So landing fees, duty-free sales, we get nothing from that.
Okay, so I stand corrected. So what other lands are we talking about specifically?
So currently there's about 1.8 million acres of land in what would be called the Public Lands Trust. That is different than the ceded lands. There's two different buckets that a lot of people get confused about sometimes. Ceded lands versus public trust lands. Ceded lands were the entirety of the lands that were illegally taken and confiscated at the overthrow. So whatever was government crown lands at the time, crown lands being the lands of Queen Liliuokalani, and what was public government lands was taken by those that illegally overthrew the Kingdom of Hawaii and was eventually ceded to the United States of America. The public trust lands are the lands that the United States of America in 1959 returned to the new state of Hawaii per the Admissions Act, known as the 5B lands. Those lands form the public trust corpus. Those lands are held by various different state agencies, and those agencies lease those lands. OHA deserves and is entitled to a 20% share of all fees, revenues, leases, on the public trust lands. Okay, the largest state agency that has public trust lands, 5B lands, is the Department of Transportation, the Harbors Division.
Where else are we talking?
Second one, DLNR. Third one, it's a lot smaller. But the you know, if we're talking lands, let's say Banyan Drive in Hilo, those are 5B lands. Pohakuloa is 5B lands. There's lands all over within DLNR, lands down at the harbor where all the harbor lands are, where all the ships come in. Those are 5B land. So Department of Transportation Harbors Division pays the largest amount of public trust lands. Right now, OHA gets about $22 million a year from the state. It really should be getting about $80 million a year.
So what's the ask this session when the it comes to those
lands? The ask is the governor is supportive of OHA's position. And the governor will be putting in a sum of money, and OHA will put in a sum of money. And the idea is for this issue to be settled by finally having a complete 100% accurate public land trust inventory of where those lands are, who holds them, what agencies have them in their inventory, what leases are on those lands, and how much those lands actually derive in income, and then at that point, what should be OHA's share of those lands?
So you're looking for solid, proper accounting?
Solid, proper accounting. Right now, that has never happened. Basically, it's on the honor system. Agencies report the honor system, but because OHA is capped at $22 million a year, agencies only report once they get to the $22 million, they stop reporting after that. And so there's no like consistency. There's no universal standard across all state agencies. That's something we need to fix.
Okay. And you think that this legislative session or these lawmakers are going to be receptive to that idea?
I hope it is, because the money that OHA receives, it's entitled to. It's entitled to via the Admissions Act. It's entitled to via the state's constitution. It's entitled to via statute. We're just not following it. But the revenues that OHA gets, we repurpose into helping Native Hawaiians, scholarships, funding, grants, capital improvement projects. So I think OHA can do a lot more. It's asked to do a lot with the minimal resources that it has. Additional public land trust revenue is something that I think is good for OHA. And I hope we can convince legislators that this is a worthy investment.
And then circling back to Kaka'aka Makai, if lawmakers say no, would OHA entertain a land swap somewhere else?
You know, I think if OHA is unsuccessful this legislative session, then I think we really need to look in the mirror and decide what we're going to do with these Kaka'aka Makai lands. In all honesty, I think it would be very unfortunate, because I think OHA is the best state entity to bring to fruition what everyone wants, which is a beautiful, developed Kaka'aka Makai that preserves the open ocean promenade as a great place for ocean recreation, bring people together, have a place that we can have a Native Hawaiian cultural center that honors the indigenous people of Hawaii. If it's not OHA, then who is it? Because it's not going to be HCDA. They don't have $500 million to put into Kaka'aka Makai. It's not going to be the state. So I really think OHA is the best agency that can bring everyone together, bring this to fruition. But if it's unsuccessful, then OHA may need to reevaluate the Kaka'aka Makai lands and look at another strategy.
Plan B.
But there is no doubt that we need residential development to fund all the other good things that everybody else wants. The money has to come from somewhere, and it comes from market sales, the 49% in those buildings that can help us fund all the other things that everyone wants. Right. Without that, we can't bring, you know, let's say elements of the 2011 Kaka'aka Makai master plan that the community widely supported. We can't bring that to fruition without residential.
All right. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And we'll circle back and see what happens at the end of session.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Catherine.
We've been hearing from former Congressman Kai Kahele, who was just elected and sworn in as chairman of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz.
Unihoa, o Maui, o Kahoolawe, o Hawaii.
Today's quiz is all about lakes. Did you know that only 5 natural lakes occur in the state? They are examples of volcanic crater lakes, created when rain or groundwater fills an empty crater rim after an eruption. The lake we're focused on today was called Kawaiapele. Legend has it that the goddess Pele bathed there long ago. It was formed more than 300 years ago when magma erupted through groundwater, and that water collected into a lake that reached about 200 feet deep. In the 1900s, this lake's water helped support sugarcane, taro, and bananas. It was also a popular swimming spot for both locals and tourists alike, who marveled at its blue-green, brackish water. Kawaiapele, also known as Green Lake, was the largest in the Hawaiian Islands until 2018, when it lost its title. For today's backyard quiz, we want to know what happened to this lake. Call 808-941-3689 or toll-free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. First one to get it right gets an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nareit Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for formerly homeless families, individuals, and kupuna, such as the Institute for Human Services, NareitHawaii.com.
Many smartphones now have a magic eraser. With just a tap, you can delete people from pictures, even add AI-generated content that never existed.
I took out all of the clutter and all of the stuff in the background, and it just looks, I'm like, well, where were we? You can just AI your way into a picture that could be anywhere.
Which makes every photo taken these days more fantasy than reality. That's on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. On view now, Satoru Abe, Reaching for the Sun, featuring 70 years of the Hawaii artist's paintings, sculptures, drawings, and prints. HonoluluMuseum.org.
As we gear up for the legislative session, we scan the landscape for what could be hot-button issues. Here to talk about priorities in our public schools is HPR's Cassie Ordonio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so what is expected to be kind of controversial this year?
So there are a couple of things that are top of mind for state lawmakers. We have expanding preschools, tackling teacher shortages and student absenteeism. And the controversial one would be banning cell phones in the classroom. Some of those are the focuses already on the governor's budget request, while others will be drafted into bills in hopes it will become law. The one that was interesting is getting the statewide cell phone ban in public schools. I spoke to Representative Justin Woodson, who chairs the Education Committee in the House. He says there will be a bill or could be a bill that would ask or require the Board of Education to create a policy to ban or restrict cell phone use in public schools.
Will be a focal point, and it has to do with not allowing cell phone use or any other piece of technology that interfaces with the internet, with social media in particular, within the confines of school hours. So this is something that in our introductory discussions, there has been a lot of emotional responses. I will say that, you know, some people love the idea, some people absolutely hate the idea, but my feeling is that we need to have a formal discussion as to whether or not it's the right direction to go as a state. And, you know, some of the data is very much so in its infancy, but it's showing, you know, correlations between, you know, those schools or jurisdictions, of course, not in Hawaii, but on the continent, that have discontinued cell phone use or have these cell phone bans. They have seen increases in their test scores. They have seen decreases in bullying, and they have seen other positive attributes that are playing out in the schools themselves. I mean, you know, I've had multiple people from different states, independent of each other, describe like an awakening, the vibrancy of the school, defined as they're seeing kids interact with each other. You know, they're playing nicely, they're getting along, they're hearing laughter, and that's something that has been largely diminished.
And it's interesting to me, though, that the lawmakers would try and pass a law to mandate this. You would think that the DOE would just establish a policy about it.
That's something I was going to do a follow-up on, if or when the lawmakers will introduce a bill this coming session, which is on January 15th. I do know that there are 19 states so far that either ban or restrict students from using their cell phones in public school classrooms, either statewide or in their local school district. Some states include California, Florida, Indiana, and even Louisiana. Other topics that lawmakers are focusing on is the expansion of preschools, and that will be in the governor's budget request. And another topic is the state has long grappled with the chronic teacher shortage. Last year, the U.S. Department of Education awarded the state a nearly $5 million grant to create a teacher apprenticeship program. And Justin Woodson says the details are still being worked out and that this program would address recruitment and retention. Another bill that's going to be reintroduced would tackle the school bus driver shortage. I spoke with Representative Trish LaChica, who will be reintroducing a measure that would give the State Department of Transportation the authority to grant the DOE and public charter schools exemptions to use vehicles to transport students, such as minibuses and vans.
Yet again, in the 24 to the 2025 school year, we had experienced another school bus crisis where we had several routes that were canceled again, and we had to again work with the governor's office to issue another emergency proclamation in August to allow the Department of Transportation to basically grant an exemption to allow for the use of vehicles other than school buses to transport students. So I'm reintroducing a bill that I did last year, which would basically make this exemption permanent and put it into statute. So what this bill would do would give the Department of Transportation the authority to grant DOE and public charter schools the exemptions for in cases when they are experiencing a crisis to use vehicles such as, you know, motor coaches, minibuses, vans, other vehicles to be able to transport students.
Yeah, I wonder what the pushback was on that.
So we'll be doing a follow-up as the legislative session is underway. I also spoke with Keikoa McClellan, who is the public policy advisor for Hawaii Kids Can. He says he's advocating for a bill that would help address the learning gap in reading for kids who aren't screened for dyslexia.
This would be sort of part of the general English language arts universal screening process, and to implement an intervention action for those students that we find need a little bit of extra help. And, you know, this would create a framework within the DOE to catch kids as soon as possible and give them those resources that we have ready within the department to do that, and to do it in a way that is not just sort of at one school or within one complex area, but to make sure that all of our keiki within the system have an opportunity to kind of, you know, be supported if they need that little extra bit of help.
So it looks like those lawmakers are just looking for ways to add that little extra help for the Department of Education.
Yeah, so we're going to see how many of those education bills will become law as the legislative session is underway. And I believe the legislative session will start January 15th.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Cassie. We've been talking to HVR's Cassie Ordonio. Look for her stories on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. Governor Josh Green has declared 2025 the year of our community forests. In a nod to this, we highlight a program started at the National Tropical Botanical Garden that will help center communities in conservation. It's called Grow Aloha, and the program itself is growing. We recently visited Kauai to learn about it. Trees feed us and shade us and can help heal. The environment is key to our health. NTBG Communications Director David Bryant tells us the Grow Aloha program was started last year to mark the 60th anniversary of the public garden. It's in place on the Garden Isle and on Maui and Molokai, and it's being expanded to other islands this year.
Really, the dream behind the program is to place our community at the heart of biocultural restoration. So allowing our community members to be part of the restoration of our, you know, communities, our built environment. And we believe by putting these plants directly in our community's hands, they can be, you know, an amazing part of that effort.
So is this what you get a plant and you take care of it in your backyard kind of thing, or you take care of it and you give it back?
Yeah, great question. So it's yours. You adopt it. We actually call them plant adoptions. Adopters fill out an adoption paper. And so each month it's a different Hawaiian native plant and a different kapuna crop or a heritage Hawaiian crop. And we have education built around those plants to help people have long-term horticultural success. But the idea is we really want to see our backyards and our landscape start to really reflect Hawaii, start to really showcase the real Hawaii through the native plants and, of course, through the crops that are so intrinsic to Hawaiian culture and to, honestly, food security and sustainability on the islands.
And so are these plants then, you know, raised through the seed at the seed bank here, or do you propagate, you know, the plants? How does that all work?
Yeah, so all the plants that we give away through NTBG are grown in our nursery, and we distribute them at our gardens on Kauai and our garden, Kahanu Garden on Maui. The heritage crops we offer are cultivars that we grow in our garden as well. So it's a really neat way to connect the garden and the plants that we grow here with our community.
And so how long have we been doing this?
We launched in March, and we hope to just keep on going. So we actually are going to be able to do it all the way through 2025. And we've been funded by several different groups and Kalunani, which is the Division of Community and Urban Forestry, part of the Department of Land and Natural Resources, has been an amazing partner. And they've actually helped fund us to take this program statewide. And so we're looking at partners on Oahu, Amy Greenwell Ethnobotanical Garden on Big Island in Hawaii, or Hawaii Island. And so we're really looking in 2025. We have an exciting project about to launch. We're going to go statewide with Grow Aloha. And so every month, Kama'aina are going to be able to adopt a native Hawaiian plant or heritage crop.
Okay, so this year is your 60th. And so this is kind of a feather in your cap, and you just want to keep it going.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're really passionate at NTBG about something we call biocultural conservation. And there's a lot that underpins that. But crucially, I think it's about centering your communities in the work of conservation and also honoring indigenous knowledge systems and indigenous perspectives. And so what Grow Aloha aims to do is really put our community at the heart of these efforts. It's allowing our community to grow these native plants in their yards, bring in these cultural plants that mean so much for the legacy and heritage of Hawaiian culture. It's really putting our community at the heart of those efforts. So we feel it's a great way, again, to connect our gardens with our community. One thing I really like to say is I see our gardens as kipuka, are these sanctuaries. You know, as the lava will sometimes flow down and encircle a forest, there's a kipuka left that has those precious native plants remaining. And from that kipuka, those plants can spread out to that fresh lava flow and essentially reforest the landscape. And I think our gardens are the same way. I think these gardens, NTBG and all of our partners, are holding on to these precious native plants, these precious heritage crops. And our community members can be the ones to take these plants out into our environment that has been, so much of it has been lost to invasive species, to development. And this is a way for them to restore biocultural dimensions and biocultural plants in the landscape. What we're trying to do through Grow Aloha is help people see the beauty and the value of native plants, see the cultural connections of these plants and heritage crops. And so when they start to think about their yards, their growing spaces, the built environment all around them, that we can collectively reimagine, you know, these places as Hawaiian places. You know, I also think about how precious like every square inch of Aina is. You know, the places we live are just as important ecologically and culturally as places farther afield. And so I think about Grow Aloha as a way for us to tend those connections in the places that we live. So we can kind of bring that passion and that perpetuation that we think about in our wildlands, we can bring that into our own backyards.
And then how does this program work? I mean, are the plants given away? Do people buy them?
Yeah, so far we've had amazing partners with Molokai Land Trust, the National Tropical Botanical Garden. We have three garden locations in Hawaii. So we have North Shore of Kauai, South Shore of Kauai, and Maui. And so every third Saturday right now, Kama'aina can come out and adopt a free plant at any of those locations. So on Kauai, Maui, Molokai, Kama'aina can come out. It's the third Saturday of the month from 9 to noon. They can adopt a free native plant, free heritage crop. It's different every month. But for 2025, we're really excited to work with Kaulunani to go statewide. That will mean, hopefully, that Kama'aina on Oahu, on Hawaii Island, maybe even Lanai will be able to adopt native plants and heritage crops too.
And do these plants get registered so we know where they're at?
They actually do. So like I said, they fill out adoption papers and those get entered into our tracking system. And so we stay in touch with adopters periodically. We'll just send very, very occasional surveys to just see how the plants are doing. And no shame, you know, if a plant passes away, you know, come and get another one. But we do track where the plants are going just to see how, you know, the impact that we all are collectively making towards native plants and crops in our built environment.
You know, is this modeled after another program somewhere else?
There are similar plant giveaway programs. There's Trees That Count in Aotearoa, New Zealand. But essentially the premise is that so many of our partners and us have been doing plant giveaways for a long time, which is great and amazing. I think what Grow Aloha aims to do is bring some synergy to that and help, if all of us can come together as a hui behind Grow Aloha, we can amplify this awesome work and provide more adoption locations more consistently for Kama'aina. So I think, you know, not just a plant giveaway here or a plant giveaway there, but routine giveaways to offer our communities that chance to kind of further their relationship with our plants.
What plants have we given away this year?
Yeah, so we've given away Ohia Lehua. We've given away Willy Willy trees. We've given away Kauaia, which is the cousin of Koa. We've given away ulu or breadfruit. I think we've given away the Ma'afala cultivar, Ma'afala variety. So we're giving away some keystone Hawaiian native plants and some culturally, you know, vital ancestral crops like ulu. And so altogether, you know, we're trying to see this restoration in our built environment. And we're choosing plants that we feel, you know, they can grow in a lot of different conditions. They can grow in a lot of parts of our islands. And they're also all fabulous. So they can, you know, in your garden, they're going to be gorgeous. And they're going to offer these really beautiful biocultural connections. And you can be part of nurturing those in your own yard. Grow native plants and heritage crops. They're so amazing. You know, plants allow us to really take care of Aina. They allow us to take care of each other. And so that's really profound. And if we can bring those plants into our lives, then we can help that all happen. So I just encourage people to deepen their relationship with plants and to get out there and grow native plants, grow heritage crops, just garden, garden, garden.
And that was David Bryant, Communications Director at the National Tropical Botanical Garden, talking about Grow Aloha as we mark 2025 as the year of our community forests. Look for links on our website later today.
There's the sun and the moon talking stories, telling tales about a new day. It's gonna be a nice day.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Chaminade University.
Hey there, it's Sabrina Tavernisi, host of The Daily. Join us for an in-depth look at the world's biggest stories as they happen. Catch The Daily, Monday through Thursday evenings at 6:30, here on HPR One.
Support for HPR comes from Haleakala Ranch with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to restore, maintain, and preserve the open vistas and natural beauty of Maui. More at haleakalaranch.com.
Now it's time to fill in the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier, we told you about the formation of crater lakes, bodies of water that fill in pockets left behind from volcanic eruptions. At nearly 2,000 feet deep, the United States' deepest lake is one of these lakes, fittingly named Crater Lake. Hawaii also had its fair share of crater lakes, including Kawaiapele, also known as Green Lake. For centuries, it held the title as the state's biggest freshwater lake and supported lush greenery around it. Then in 2018, the lake lost its title. We asked you what happened to Green Lakes. Well, on June 2nd at 10 in the morning, lava from Kilauea's lower Puna eruption flowed into the lake, causing a massive tower of steam to rise into the air. By 3 p.m., the fire department confirmed that the popular swimming sport was no more. The reason Kawaiapele lost its title as Hawaii's largest lake was that it evaporated. And congrats to Kathleen from Pahoa. You got it right. And that's today's quiz. If you have an idea for one, send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. A global contest to name a space rock orbiting Earth concludes today, and a student and teacher at Castle High School played a key role in the deliberation. Maya Sullivan is a special education teacher, and Halia Tom Jardine is a 11th grade student at Castle. They took part in a panel to name a quasi-moon orbiting Earth, and today the International Astronomical Union announced its name, Kardea. What's a quasi-moon? We'll take a listen to this clip from a 2024 episode of the NPR show Radiolab.
Quasi meaning just like a small moon?
Quasi meaning neither moon nor not moon. It's this mysterious in-between thing that's the first anyone has ever discovered anywhere in the universe.
Quasi-moon or quasi-moon, which one is correct pronunciation?
When you say it, I like quasi because it sounds like crazy.
And Earth has a bunch of quasi-moons too.
We do? How many have they found?
There's at least like 7 of them, I think.
What?
And all of these are all different. Like we have some Trojan moons, we have some horseshoe moons.
Wow.
And Radiolab and the IAU selected Sullivan and Halia to help name the quasi-moon. It was a star-studded panel featuring the likes of Bill Nye, the science guy, and actor Penn Bagley. Halia and her teacher spoke with the conversation's Maddie Bender about the experience and what goes into naming a space rock. Halia starts us off.
Honestly, I didn't know initially what I was getting to, but all I know was that I was naming a moon, and I thought that was really cool. So before we got on the panel, we had to review 20 of these submitted names, and we just had to like give our feedback on it. And this one name that I really liked that was on this list was Pulelehua, which means butterfly in Hawaiian. And I thought that like matched it perfectly because like the quasi moon, it's not really predictable, just how like a butterfly is. And then when we got on the panel, so there was 20, and then I was given a name to talk about on the panel. The name was, it's Papalotu. It's like, it's from the Aztec culture. It's like an ancient Mexican culture. And it also related to butterfly. That's what I really liked. It's like a butterfly goddess in the Aztec culture. And I really thought that fit the name.
Right. So they asked if people were willing to champion certain names. So there was like over 2,000 submissions. So we had to rate all of the names. And because we had very limited time, this was a huge panel. They narrowed it down to those names and then just asked that there was one or two champions per name to kind of get additional perspectives on each of the names before we narrowed it from the 20 to the 10. And the voting was live then within the panel, because it was quite a large panel, get to narrow it down.
One of the reasons why I really wanted to do this story was just to get into the cultural significance of the moon in Hawaiian culture. So is that a thing that you knew about, Halia, or are passionate about?
Yes, actually. Like, you know, just my basic knowledge. What I knew first off was, like, I know the moon is good. Like, for telling you if you could plant something, or if you could go fishing on a certain moon, the tides, the wind. Like, for example, Ku Moon, which means like tall, is good for like planting upright plants like Mai'a, which is banana, or Kalo. And I'm pretty sure Kanaloa is pretty windy, that moon. Like, since I like paddle and surf, it's good to know like the currents or what you're getting into. And I think it's good to like incorporate that when I was naming the moon, because it kind of gives you like more direction, or like, I don't know how to explain it.
One of the things that we spoke about was how a Native Hawaiian perspective on moon and on mahina is going to be different. And I think we were the only Hawaii-based. There was one Marshallese name in the final 20, which I felt just really spoke to the, as far as navigation goes, right? I mean, I think there's so much really specific and special ike from Hawaii that should be part of any sort of conversation about our science and space and, you know, astronomy. I think all of these things are, you know, we have a lot of that knowledge here. And so to make sure that was included, that perspective was represented, was the other reason why when we had this opportunity, I really wanted to take advantage of it and to allow, especially allow Halia an opportunity to share her perspective.
They narrowed the names of this quasi-moon down. We're at 10.
Yeah.
And the general public gets to vote. What are each of your hopes with what the name ends up being and what it can stand for?
One thing that I thought was interesting that came up in the panel was to be careful to not demote. So one of the requirements of the names that were listed is that they needed to be mythological or associated with some kind of story. And some of the names submitted were actually like too powerful. Mm-hmm. And yeah. A quasi-moon is not the moon, right? So there are, Talia and I were just talking about this, right? There are 30 names for the moon in all of its phases here in Hawaii. And I think that this moon, though, it'll be with us, and it'll be with us for, I think, 600 years, they were saying, but it will leave, right? And so to not bring down that significance of, you know, you don't want to actually name this quasi-moon after a powerful, super powerful figure, but also wanting to represent all of these different perspectives and cultures at the same time. So I think it's a balance. And I just, honestly, my thing is less so about the name and more so just about continuing to be curious and continuing to, you know, look in the sky and think about what's there, why it's there, as Halia was saying, right? What lessons are there in not even just the naming, but in the existence of, you know, all of these beings that might not be so obvious to us on first glance.
Yeah, and also why I wanted to talk about or was a champion for the name, it's Papalotu. Not just like it being like relative to its patterns or just what it looks like, but also to bring more awareness to its culture, because Aztec is like the ancient culture and I want to bring more awareness to it.
Did you know what a quasi-moon was before this contest?
No, I didn't. And I thought it was a moon, but it's actually like an asteroid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like really like an obsidian, darker color.
And I guess even just outside of the moon specific, I do want to, and I let Halia speak to this as well. But something that I was just really impressed with during this whole process was not only her initiative, but, you know, I know that Halia was nervous at certain times, but she did really well and spoke really well on the panel. And, you know, there were people in the comments saying, like, I'm so happy you championed this name. I really liked this name. And just, I think, using those skills of discernment, you know, and again, all of that, right, all of our knowledge that we carry with us is all part of that process, right? Even if we're not actively drawing on it, right? So I do think that you drew on a lot of really important skills, and I thought that was really awesome to see.
Thank you.
In that setting, what did you think? Were you nervous?
Yeah, I was really nervous because like all of these important higher up people, I was like, I feel like I don't belong here because I'm just a high school student. But I guess it was good just, you know, getting out there and bringing more awareness.
And I mean, you think about some of the other people on that panel. Do kids know who Bill Nye is?
Yeah.
Okay. Is he still cool?
Well, I watch it at school, like for a science class. They make us watch it.
What did that feel like to see, you know, these other people? Was it like a Zoom call type thing or in person?
Yeah. It was pretty cool. I saw the show Rots. Do you know Gossip Girls? Yeah. You know Dan from, he was like Serena's boyfriend movie. I thought that was really cool because I got to see him. And just like hearing all these like astronomers, it was really cool. Like their info, their knowledge. It was really interesting.
And they're from all over the world too. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really mindful.
Yeah, someone was like up at like 2 a.m. somewhere.
When they ultimately announce what the name is, you'll feel like you had a role in that. Do you think you'll follow the news of this quasi-moon?
You know, maybe.
And I think just looking ahead, Halia is really interested in marine biology, marine sciences. And I think that, again, that perspective of not, you know, it's very Western of us to even separate, you know, astronomy from marine biology. Yeah. And knowing that you will always understand that connection is something.
They go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Well, in our culture, at least, they do. You know, with the moons, the tides, currents, all that stuff.
And I think someone's going to have to keep reminding people of that. And I feel very lucky that I know that you will be one of those people.
Yeah, hopefully one day, you know, I could make something like connected to the moons and have like a really big discovery.
If there's someone listening, a younger person who says, that sounds really cool, I want to name a moon, advice for thinking of names?
First of all, I think you should, you know, do research. But also when you're naming the moon, make sure it doesn't also like physically match up, but like also make sure it brings like it connects yourself, like it connects where you're from. And it's good to like have something, a part of you in it, not just like about the moon.
That was Castle High School special ed teacher Maya Sullivan and 11th grader Halia Tom Jardine talking with HPR's Maddie Bender. We'll have links where you can find out more about the quasi-moon Cardea and why that was chosen on the conversation page of our website later today.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday.
That is it for us right now. Tomorrow, we hear about the latest on the fireworks explosion that turned into a mass casualty event, killing 4 people, including a 3-year-old child. What's your position on illegal fireworks? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. You can find the conversation on our website or as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the conversation.